Welcome to Multifamily AP 360, the show where we discuss 360-degree views on mindset, passive, and active multifamily investment. If you're looking for tips and strategies, or just want to learn from the experiences of others, both good and bad, then listen on. This is Multifamily AP 360 with your host, Ramakrishna Chinchu.
Welcome back to another episode of Multifamily AP 360. And today's our guest is Ryan Cha from Newbie Real Estate Investments. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going, Rama? Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Sure, doing great. Hope you are also doing great. And thank you for joining.
Yeah, no problem.
Sure. And go ahead and introduce yourself, your background, you know, your experience into real estate space, Ryan.
Yeah, so I'm a retired pharmacist. I worked in pharmacy for 8 years. And at the point where the rental income was able to replace my pharmacy income, I was like, okay, at that point, I'll go ahead and retire. So it happened to be when I was 31 years old. And what I did is I used this very unique strategy of renting by the bedroom to college students and professionals. So like residents and fellows. And I would usually find houses where I could get it to 5 or 6 bedrooms. And I would rent out each bedroom for $600 to $700 per month, which means I was making $3,600 to $4,200 in rental income on each house. So I doubled the rental income that I could make on every property that I bought. It was a very scalable strategy. I was able to buy my first house when I was 23 back in 2016. And I basically bought one house per year by reinvesting the initial cash flow. So every time I bought a house, my income would jump up. And so I would be able to buy the next house a little bit sooner. So I stuck with one house per year strategy until I would say about the 5th or 6th year when I started expanding out of state. So now I have 5 California rentals, 9 in Ohio, and 1 in Alabama. And all student housing or professionals, like medical professionals, for example.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Before jumping into core real estate side, I have a few other questions. Like, you travel a lot, like you traveled Japan, Taiwan, Vietnam, and a few other, you know, countries like London, Germany. So yeah. What are some lessons learned from that traveling? And also how exactly you're implementing that into, or how exactly that is helping you into real estate space?
Yeah, I think it's important to really create a life, like create your own life, right? Create a life that you enjoy, because if you do all this hard work and you're not enjoying the fruits of your labor, you know, what's the point? So I usually make it a point to travel about 4 times a year or so. And that really gives me perspective on life. I can step back, look at where I'm going, where I want to go, what I want to do, what I enjoy doing. And then it also gives me cultural perspective, exposure to different cultures and different belief systems. And like when I visited Japan, for instance, one of the biggest things was hospitality. They're very hospitable people. They take care of everything. You feel almost like you're treated like a king when you're over there. And it's very service oriented. And so I wanted to provide that experience for my students, the student tenants who are staying at my houses. And so I learned a lot from traveling. And I think it's great because it gives you that perspective and it makes you realize that the world is really big and you don't get too pigeonholed into your own little world, right?
Got it. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your experiences. So what is our big why?
My big why, it kind of started out in a different place where it ended up, I would say, because I got started as a pharmacist because an Asian family, right? So either a doctor, a lawyer, or engineer, right? And then I was like, okay, well, I might as well do what my parents are recommending because I was a good Asian son. So I started off that way, but then I realized that what I enjoy about work is serving others. And I think, you know, that's the biggest thing I liked about pharmacy is that at the end of the day, you're improving somebody's life. And so when I got into like really start getting into real estate, that's kind of one of my goals as well, is improving their lives. Also, of course, to earn financial freedom for myself. So it's like a win-win situation. What's nice for the students is we're charging half the price of on-campus housing. So it's very affordable for them. We're only charging $600 versus the on-campus is charging $1,200. That's why there's a huge market for it. In fact, I call it the blue ocean market because it's a very untapped market. Yeah. Anyways, I saw my friend doing this in college. And he was renting to his college buddies. Not only was he living for free, but he was making cash flow on top of it. And so I was like, oh, this is really cool. It's a win-win situation for everyone. Why not give it a go? And I knew I didn't want to be a pharmacist for until I'm 65, because I knew this pharmacist at my hospital, and he told me, I'm just here for my paycheck, right? He had a tough life. He went through like three divorces. As soon as he retired, I think it was about only 3 months later, he died of a massive heart attack. I was like, oh my God, this guy worked his whole life. He finally retired and he only had 3 months to enjoy his retirement. And the rest of his life, he hated it. So I was like, man, I don't want to work my whole life until I'm 65 and then have that happen to me. You know, so I wanted to create a life where I get to, like I mentioned at the beginning, like step back, analyze what my goals are in life. What do I love doing? How can I stay passionate about life? Right. And yeah, that's kind of where it went, where I ended up.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that background. So you self-manage your properties, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah.
I would say at the beginning, I was definitely very self-managed. The first five or six rentals, I just managed it all myself. After that, I started hiring people like bookkeepers, virtual assistants, executive assistants. That's only because I have like 75 tenants by now. So because I have 15 properties, right? So I have a lot of tenants and I need help with handling like laws, compliance, things like that, right? Like getting LEED certified. You know, there's things that you don't know until you really get into real estate that's like, okay, we should do that. We need to do that.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. So tell me, like, what kind of systems and processes you have developed, like, from acquisition process point of view, and also like tenant screening point of view, or managing or operations, renovations, or any repair and maintenance stuff?
I mean, there's a lot that goes into this. And I think your question is explain kind of like the whole process and how it's a little bit different than other
Yeah.
processes out there. So it all starts with the market analysis or market research is what you can call it. And basically that involves looking at the different top colleges. I always want to be at a college with degree a good amount of graduate programs. The reason why is because most college housing it do not provide for graduates. They only have enough on-campus housing for undergrads. They just don't provide for graduates. So a lot of them will have like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 grad students, and they just can't stay off cam on campus, and they have no choice but to stay off campus. So this is like, you know, this niche works really, really well is because there's just a huge amount of grad students. So I try to find a place that has a good amount of like MD, PharmD, you know, JD, engineering degree, MBA, basically a bunch of post grad programs where the students are going to have to really study hard to get their degree so that I get the right type of tenant. Like I want somebody who's like very studious, right? Then I examine the area and go on student forums and Reddit and see what are the go-to areas to stay for student housing. What are the students talking about word of mouth? Like on the streets, like stay here. This is the best place to stay for student housing. It's a great neighborhood. Once I do that, I start looking at the properties in those neighborhoods and figure out, okay, what's my ROI? If I get this to six bedrooms and I rent out 700 per bedroom, that'll be $4,200 a month, for example. And I'll look on a deal by deal basis, but what I'll really look for is being close to the school and being 1800 square foot or more, because I want large houses where I can get it to the six bedrooms, because that's a really good sweet spot for students don't feel too uncomfortable with having like 20 people at a house. And I make a good amount of cash flow on those ones, anywhere again from like lowest maybe $1,500 per month in California, all the way up to my highest one, which is $4,000 per month in net cash flow. And then from there, I figure out, okay, where can I add those bedrooms? It could be like dividing a living room in half, repurposing a family room or a dining room as a bedroom. And then I just go through the marketing. Like basically, I start marketing as soon as the offer is accepted, and I specifically target student tenants. And then I have my management processes on the back end for once they move in, what are the house rules? What are the move-in instructions? Take pictures of your room, right? It's kind of like Airbnb that lists like, here's the Wi-Fi password. This day is trash day, that kind of stuff, right? So there's a process for everything.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. From financing point of view, how exactly you started? What kind of financing you are using?
Yeah, I just conventional financing. It was all my own money. I just worked a lot overtime as a pharmacist, 14 to 16 hour shifts. Like we call them double shifts because you get paid a time and a half and then you get two times the pay. So I did a lot of that. I just really hustled at the very beginning. On the second house, I could only put a 10% down. I did it as a second home. And I just, was running out of capital until finally my rentals were starting to make more cash flow so that I can continue on, right? I even had to get a little bit creative. I took a loan from my father. Basically, what happened on my first house, I had a sewage line break, which cost about $9,000 to replace the sewage line. And the tenant was saying, like, hey, there's sewage shooting out of the kitchen sink. It's all over the kitchen floor. We got to deal with this, right? So obviously unexpected repairs is very common. And then I had an HVAC that I had to replace on that same house. It was a 100-year-old house, and that cost me about $15,000. So all in all, it costs like at least $23,000. If you include like pest control and all the other issues, it was over $30,000. But what I did is I didn't have much money in the bank. So I had to ask my father, hey, look, this is what's going on. If you loan me $23,000, I'll use part of that money to build this bedroom here. And then you'll get the rent from that bedroom for the rest of your life. And then after that, when he passes away, it'll go back to me. So he was making $550 on that room per month, which is about a 30-something percent return on his investment. So for him, and it's for life, right? So it's a win-win situation because I didn't have to put any money into it, any extra effort per se. And he was able to cover all the costs of those repairs. That's only because at the very beginning, I was kind of very scrappy, right? I was looking for any house I could find. I chose a house that was 100 years old and, had a lot of problems. But yeah, conventional financing. And then eventually I got to a point where once you hit 10 Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loans, you cannot get those loans anymore. So I had to use DSCR after that because I have 8 Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loans, and I want to save like one for my vacation home, potentially, or dream home. And so, yeah, eventually I went to DSCR, which uses the rental income that the house will make to qualify you for the mortgage. As long as it covers the mortgage, then you're most likely qualified.
You mean commercial loan or investment loan? What exactly
It's
is
kind
that?
of a hybrid. It's a 30-year fixed loan. It's in a way that has some commercial qualities, like the prepayment penalty, meaning after the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, if you pay off the loan and refinance it, you have to pay a small penalty. It starts off like for the 5-year one, it starts off at 5%, I believe, and then it goes 4%, then 3%, 2%, 1% until it disappears. But for the most part, it's very similar to 30-year fixed loan. I mean, it is a fixed loan for 30 years. And the main difference is they don't do an income check. They don't check your personal income. They check how much will the property make based off of the appraisal report. So it's basically a form of no income verification. It's obviously you have to make sure you have the down payment and reserves, but it's more commercial quality because commercial loans, as it doesn't necessarily use your personal income to qualify you. It uses the rental income to qualify you.
Yeah, got it. So what kind of leverage you got for those deals? Like what kind of LTV you got? What kind of interest rate you got?
Yeah, when I started in 2016, interest rates were pretty low. I think my first one was like 3.7%, 3.75%. Most of my interest rates throughout the years were around 4.125%. I think in 20, man, if I remember correctly, I think around 2018, they went up to 5%-ish, maybe 4.8%. 8.75 or something like this. And then of course, during the recent years, it shot up to 6 and 7.5 and 8%, right? And so what's great about the DSCR loans is if you find the right lender, the rates are pretty similar to conventional rates. They can in fact be exactly conventional rates. And in some cases I've had it be better than conventional rates. It just depends on the lender you find. It's all about shopping, right? And commercial loans or the DSCR loan is a little bit more lenient than the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loan. There's less requirements. There's a little bit more flexibility in terms of what the lender is willing to lend on. And if you like build a relationship, it's very similar to that a portfolio loan where if you build a relationship, they'll probably give you better terms.
Got it. Thank you.
How about.
exactly COVID impacted your rental home?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so what happened? COVID-19 in 2020, I think it happened like March or so, and the school year is in August. So what happened is the school shut down. It announced it was all online. So what happened is I had some people that were like, "Oh, I signed this August lease, but I want to get out of it because school is now online." Now, it's less people than you would think because a lot of the students didn't want to stay at their parents' place. They wanted to still stay with their friends so that they could study and still have a college experience to some degree. So not all of them canceled. A lot of them still wanted to stay. They felt that the home environment was too chaotic for them, and they needed to be with their other friends to study together, especially in these harder subjects like pharmacy and dentistry or engineering, etc. So what happened is about half of them stayed. I would say another 25%. I asked them, "Hey, if we decrease the rent by $100 a month, would you be comfortable staying?" And about 25% of them said, "Oh yeah, sure, I'll stay if we decrease it a bit. That seems fair and everything." And then the last 25%, I had to market. I really had to start calling up people. I was like, "Hey, I know COVID's happening, but I'm willing to do this for you. You know, we want to keep this place a safe environment, obviously, but it'd be nice too for you because you get to study with your friends. You can bring everyone out, all your friends into one house." What's great about this method actually is you might have one person interested and they have like four or five other friends. And so your whole house gets filled pretty much immediately, right? So I think it was by December of 2020, pretty much the same. I mean, it was the same year. I had my place fully occupied still. And instead of making about, at the time, it was like $10,700 per month. It only brought me down to about $9,300 a month. So I was able to cover all my mortgages and then some. And then my occupancy was 100%.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you very much. So, would you share any best experience so far?
Best experience. I had got this one deal that was like 11 bedrooms, bought it for $83,000 discount under market price. And it was because nobody wanted to buy it. It was 11 bedrooms and no one wants 11 bedrooms. So, but for me, it was perfect because it was super close to the school. And so, what happened is we had this fraternity contact us, a professional fraternity. They said, "Hey, we got nine guys." So, we got nine guys in there. I obviously make sure that they have enough amenities so it doesn't feel overcrowded. Like, they have several fridges, they have several washer and dryers, right? So, it was kind of like, upgraded form of the dormitory style because it's like you're staying at this nice mansion with many rooms to study. And then, they would each pay about 600, 700 per month. So at the end of the day, filling, 10 of 9 of the bedrooms, making about 6,000, a bit over 6,000 a month. And so the cash flow was about 4,000 a month on that one.
Yeah, too good deal. Yeah, awesome. So would you also share any challenging experience?
Yeah, at the very beginning, I had, well, obviously the sewage line-ish story. I had a party tenant as well. I had a cop call me and say, "Hey, your kids are doing this, that he's smoking pot during a time when it was illegal in California. He's playing loud music." I was like, "Oh man, I gotta do something about this, right?" And I knew that he was a party type tenant because he was in the same fraternity as me. So I knew what he was like. But I was very desperate at the time. And so I was just taking anybody. So, why it's so important to screen your tenants? And a lot of times, nowadays I target graduate students, people who have to be serious about their schooling in order to get that degree. I also target like residents, fellows, because they stay for 1 to 3 years. That's medical residents and medical fellowships. And so, I learned a lot since then. And it's been a lot about screening your tenant, talking to them, seeing what type of tenant they are.
Yeah, especially your first deal will be like, will not do good, job in a screening site. But like, once we get that experience, then we'll start, focusing on that area.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like if you put yourself in the position of a CEO of a company, right? Let's say you're hiring people. If you hired the general public, may or may not work out so well for you. But if you do your due diligence research, you can hire the right people. And, those people aren't throwing parties at your company every day or something like that. And I think the perception that, you're going to have frat parties and everything at your properties if you do student housing is actually more of a myth than reality. If you're, again, looking for the right people, it's the same thing as like a company or your retail store, get the right people.
Yeah, thank you. What's your plan for next 2 to 5 years?
My goal is to get to 100 properties providing student housing. I really like the niche because, again, we are providing a service. I kind of relate to these students because I'm relatively new still for graduating. In fact, I even had them ask me questions like for pharmacy school because I was a pharmacist. And so they asked me, like, what organization should I join? What classes are going to be tough? Do you have any notes? You know, all of that type of stuff. I love helping them. So I provide all of that, kind of create this genuine connections with the students. And so I love doing it. I want to get to a place where, I have 100 rentals because it's a very exciting goal for me. And yeah, hopefully in the next 5 to 8 years or so. Last year, I actually purchased 8 rentals in a year. So trying to keep pace with that. And then, yeah, just continue on.
Awesome. Thank you. So, any personal habits that are helping you to be successful?
I would say there's a couple of things. One thing you want to do, it's a little bit less of a habit, but surround yourself with smart people, successful people. Well, I guess it is a habit because I always reach out to people and I'm always looking to build my network. So at the very beginning, you're going to want to get your rock star real estate agent. So really do your research and look through all the reviews and talk to them and kind of interview them. Because a rock star real estate agent will have access to rock star lenders, rock star property management, rock star contractors. And so you really want to find your rock star team, your rock star people. And so that's one thing I do. It sounds weird, like being Asian myself and introverted, they used to say, oh, you got to network. You got to go to these networking events and stuff. When I hear networking event, I feel like puking, right? Like, no, I don't feel comfortable meeting up like 100 people and making small talk, right? But it's nothing like that. It's more of like a one-on-one connection that you want to establish with these people. You call them up, you kind of get their story, you learn about them, you learn how you can make this valuable for them, this relationship, and then obviously you will need help finding really great deals, et cetera, and really good resources as well. So I think that's one habit that I kind of developed throughout the years for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. So any books impacted you?
Well, there's a lot. Obviously, if you haven't read Rich Dad Poor Dad, read that. Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller is a great one for scaling and really seeing this as a team sport because it is. Real estate is a team sport. And then I would say another great one, once you have like 3 rentals on your belt, is to start to read this book called Traction, which is about building the business systems and the back end of the business because it's important when you want to scale. You have those in place. Like if you just have 3 properties, you can do very well. Let's say you have 4 properties, right? And each makes 2,000 a month in cash flow using this student housing method, like, doubling your rental income. Well, that's $8,000 a month. That's enough for a good amount of people to feel very comfortable. I mean, nowadays with inflation and stuff, who knows, right? But $8,000 to $10,000 a month, I would say a lot of people are pretty comfortable with that passive income coming in. And you're able to retire if you really wanted to. But if you want to get to, see what your full potential is, definitely you want to start building up those back-end processes. Even if it means like, paying people a lot of money or a good amount of money, it's worth it because your time is worth more than having to do everything yourself. Your time becomes more valuable, right? If you really break down, okay, I'm making this much. This is how many hours do I work? This is how much I make per hour. If the outsourced job or if the job could be outsourced for less than that amount that you make per hour, then you need to do it, right? Otherwise, it's basically kind of wasting your time. So I would say that's kind of one of those things you have to think about.
Sure, thank you. And how can listeners can connect with you, Ryan?
I have a company, newbierealestateinvesting.com. The best way to reach me is to go to www.newbierealestateinvesting.com/guide. And that guide is a free PDF that I provide, which goes through my strategy, some of the mistakes that I made that you can avoid, and a lot of the obstacles that I had to overcome in order to make this happen for myself, as well as personal stories that will help you along your journey. Again, that's www.newbierealestateinvesting.com/guide. And newbie is spelled NEWBIE.
Awesome. And thank you very much, Dan. Thank you.
That's the end of this episode of Multifamily AP 360, but we'd love to continue to help you on your journey. Head to ushacapital.com/podcast to join our email list for more tips and strategies. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. This is Multifamily AP 360 with Ramakrishna Chunchu. We'll see you next time.